Lincoln Spector was introduced to the computer industry in 1983 when he watched his first computer, an Osborne 1, drop in value from $1,500 to $200 within weeks of buying it. After that experience, there was no option left but to become a humorist. Gigabytes made its debut in the August 12, 1986 issue of San Francisco Bay Area Computer Currents. The column now appears in 13 publications in 4 countries. Lincoln is also a contributing editor for PC World, where he would be taking over the answer line column as of the December issue. Lincoln Spector is the author's real name, appearing on his birth certificate and driver's license. He spent his youth going to movies and performing in amateur theatrics and has been trying to return to that lifestyle ever since. When he isn't writing, Lincoln spends most of his time trying to find affordable health care. Here we go. Lincoln Spector.
Good afternoon. It's been afternoon for about 12 minutes. Quite a crowd we have today. Hello? Does this make any difference? Yeah, I'll use it as a prop. You know, pretend I'm Roger Daltrey here or something. It's recording, did you say? Oh, cool. Sort of an interesting show for me because, as was just mentioned, my very first computer was an Osborne 1. And I've been thinking about it a lot lately. And it was a very different experience using that as opposed to my current Pentium. If I wanted to, say, delete a line in WordStar, you know, the thing didn't have a hard disk, right? So you would put you'd have one floppy in drive A where you'd have your operating system and your word processor, which is kind of amazing today to put your operating system and your word processor on a floppy. Today they don't fit on a gigabyte hard drive. And you put them in drive A and your data in drive B, and if you, like, deleted a line in WordStar, they would talk to each other for 3 minutes. Yeah, you get this whir, 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 whir. Then the line would delete, and finally the data disk would go whir. And wondering what columns of mine I was going to read to you today, I decided I would start with one that is something, I guess, of a vintage column in itself. Well, I wrote it in 93, not that long ago. I don't know, somehow I feel like I should have this pointing at me anyway. But it's dealing with the history itself, so I thought it would be appropriate. It's called The Legend of the PC, that is P-E-A-S-E-A, although many of you may have found it on the internet without my name, under the name The DOS Fish, because it's one that's been pirated. Without the water, I really get into a horrible I.O. problem. Long ago, in the days when all disks flopped in the breeze and the writing of words was on a star, the blue giant dug for the people, the PC. But he needed a creature who could sail the waters and would need for support but few rams. So the gateskeeper, who was said to be both micro and soft, fashioned a DOS fish who was small and spry and could swim the narrow 16-bit channel. But the DOS fish was not bright and could be taught few tricks. And the size of his file cabinet was limited by his own fat. At first, the people loved the DOS fish, for he was the only one who could swim the PC. But the people soon grew tired of commanding his lines and complained that he could neither be dragged nor dropped. Forsooth, they cried, the DOS fish can only do one job at a time, and of names he knows only 8 and 3. And many of them left the PC for good and went in search of the magic apple. Although many went, far more stayed, because admittance to the PC was cheap. So the gatekeeper studied the magic apple and rested a while in the park of the Zier Ox. And he made a window that could ride on the DOS fish and do its thinking for it. But the window was slow, and it could break when the DOS fish got confused. So most people contented themselves with the DOS fish. Now it came to pass that the blue giant came upon the gateskeeper and spoke thus, "Come, let us make of ourselves something greater than the Dosfish." The blue giant seemed like a humbug, so they called the new creature Oz 2. Now Oz 2 was smarter than the Dosfish, as most things are. It could drag and drop, and could keep files without becoming fat. But the people cared for it not. So the blue giant and the gateskeeper promised another Oz 2 to be called Oz 2-2, that could swim faster in the new 32-bit PC. Then lo, a strange miracle occurred. Although the window that rode on the Dosfish was slow, it was pretty. And the third window was prettiest of all. And the people began to like the third window and to use it. So the gatekeeper turned to the blue giant and said, "Fie on thee, for I need thee not. Keep thy Oz 2-2, and I shall make of my window an entity that will not need the Dosfish and will swim in the 32-bit PC." Years passed, and the workshops of the gatekeeper and the blue giant were many times overrun by insects. And the people went on using their Dosfish with a window, even though the Dosfish would from time to time become confused and die. It could always be revived with three fingers. Then there came a day when the blue giant let forth his Oz 2-2 onto the world. The Oz 2-2 was indeed mighty and awesome and required a great ram. And the world was changed. Not a whit. For the people said, "It is indeed great, but we see little application for it." Now the eunuchs, who lived on the oceans of the Great Risk and scorned the PC, began to look upon their world with fear. For the PC had grown and great ships were sailing in it. The entity was about to invade their oceans. And it was rumored that files would be named in letters greater than 8. And the eunuchs looked upon the PC, and many of them thought to immigrate. And the people also looked upon the PC, and they were sore amazed, and sore confused, and sore. And that is why to this day, Oz's, entities, magic apples and eunuchs battle on the shores of the PC. But the people still travel on the simple Dosfish. You know, DOS is kind of an interesting experience now that I've been pretty much using just Windows the last few years. I had reason a few days ago to look at DOS versions of 1.2.3 and Quicken. And yeah, it was amazing how difficult they are to use. You know, we're spoiled now. Everything has become much easier. And one of the reasons that things have become easier is something that software companies are doing, and magazines are doing it as well, which is where my own experience with it comes, which is called usability testing. If none of you have ever seen this in action, what happens is you put an allegedly normal person into a small room and stare at them through a two-way mirror and through video cameras while they try to figure out how to use a computer. And it was after I had had some experiences doing that with the Usability Lab in PC World, or an article I was working on, that I wrote this column, which is called Only a Test. Have programming tools become easier to use? How does object orientation, visual metaphors, and point-and-click debugging apply to the uneducated user? Can we expect the average Joe or Josephine to write his or her own spreadsheet program? Are we asking the wrong questions? To find out, we invited 5 novice users into our state-of-the-art usability test set to see if they could create quality custom applications. None of our test subjects had ever used a PC before, although 3 of them admitted questioning to having seen Sandra Bullock in The Net. None of them admitted having seen her in Speed 2. Our tests proved conclusively that with certain novice users, with today's easier development tools, they can sometimes produce programs of semi-practical value. Maybe. Our methodology was as simple as a game of Tetris. We brought in our subjects and ran them through three progressively more difficult tests as we watched their every move, monitored them, and saved two from minor heart attacks. To determine if Void was, at its most basic, an intuitive program to use, for our first test we had each subject launch it from the start menu. Subject A spent 10 minutes trying to find the mouse, then another 20 rolling it across the surface of the screen. Subject B had less difficulty, seizing the mouse immediately, pointing it towards the screen, and clicking. Subject C caught on right away to the metaphor of, as she put it, funny little pictures on a TV screen, and probably would have successfully launched Void if we had remembered to install it. Subject D screamed invectives at us, swearing he wouldn't touch anything except a Macintosh. Subject D was more cooperative, looking at us adoringly and wagging his tail in enthusiasm. Although some would consider this test an outright failure, it actually told us a considerable amount about Void. While none of the five subjects successfully launched the program, chances are they would have been equally unsuccessful loading a common Windows productivity app, such as AutoCAD or Minesweeper. We therefore concluded that Visual Object Integration Draw was no more difficult to use than a registry editor. For our next test, we had each of the five subjects create a simple application that displayed the text, "Hello World." Subject A got off to a good start, immediately figuring out that pressing the H key on her keyboard produced an H on screen. Within 10 minutes, she had deduced how that action could be affected by the shift key. By the end of her allotted 2 hours, she had managed to type, "Hello World," a sentence which, despite written instructions, Subject B never quite figured out how to spell. Subject C once again gave the best performance, quickly creating an application that immediately crashed, thereby making herself the equal to most Windows programmers. She eventually got a program to work, although a confusion in class hierarchy produced the message, "World, hello." Subject D never got past the point where he was supposed to click the new project icon, although he swore he could have done it in half the time with a Macintosh. Subject D whined a bit, then rolled over onto his back and waited for someone to scratch his stomach. Now that we had determined that novices could indeed program, we started our subjects on their final test, building a mission-critical diagnostic and repair tracking application for airlines. The results were surprising. Subject A used the extra time to catch up on her sleep. Subject B stumbled onto solitaire, where he lost 58 games in a row before daring the computer to play for cash. Subject C never completed the application, but she did create an installation program that dumped 85 DLLs into the Windows system directory and hopelessly corrupted the registry. I'm happy to report that she's now considering job offers from both Netscape and Microsoft. Subject D underwent a religious conversion and decided to devote the rest of his life to OS 2. With the added incentive of a rawhide bone, Subject E succeeded in creating a complete application for predicting airliner mechanical failure, which is now being considered by ValueJet. Our test proved conclusively that novices can learn to use modern programming tools. All it takes is patience, proper hardware, a little kibble, and three video cameras. I did have another column I was thinking of reading, but I think, considering the size of the group, I'm going to try something else. This is something that I have done before. I don't know how many of you regularly read my column and are aware of something I've got in it called Ask Dr. DRAM, which is essentially a parody of Q&A columns. I'm actually doing a serious Q&A column now, but that's in another magazine. What I like to do is something I call DRAM Interactive. Basically, I'm opening up the floor for questions, problems you're having with your computer, anything technical you want answered. The only thing I request is please don't try to actually do any of the things I suggest. But okay, so anyone have any questions here? Well, you probably don't have a modem. Have you checked the doors of your home? Someone could be coming in and stealing your modem every hour. In fact, I might be doing that probably. Anyone else? Yeah, I know the problem. My dog has the same problem. Actually, shutting down a ThinkPad is fairly easy. You can do it with a hacksaw or a sledgehammer. Any others? Why are bites and nibbles spelled with a Y? I think they were planning to spell nibbles with two P's and decided that that wouldn't do. Probably because if they had spelled bite with a Q, no one would know how to pronounce it. Actually, I understand that the word bite is falling out of favor because there's more than three letters and they can't really do it accurately very well. Any others? Why are bytes 8-bit? Yeah, why can't I pronounce that? Why are bytes 8-bits? Now that's a tongue twister. I'm stalling you because I'm trying to think of a joke here. Why are bytes 8-bits wide? Well, you know, they did try 9-bit bytes, and they ran into problems. It tended to be accidents on the information superhighway, and there were major stalls. There is, however, IBM in its attempt to, a constant attempt to be more hip, is coming out with sportier 5-bit bytes that will in fact be painted red and not have the back seats. Anything else? Oh, boy. Okay, I have to tell you something here. I normally write my columns about 4 weeks ahead of time. I write them like a week before they're due, and they're due about 3 weeks before they come out in print. But every so often, I call Robert Lund, the editor of Computer Currents, and say, look, I got to write one right away and get it in as soon as possible because it's really timely. I've done that maybe 3 times over the last 10 years. I've done it 4 times this year, all because of Apple. I have never had one company supply me so much material as Apple has this year. It's like the old days of IBM. Should Steve Jobs remain president of Apple? I believe Bill Gates thinks so. What do they call it? Well, because they felt that the more accurate title, Big Black and Blue, was too long. Yeah, well, you know, they came out with Microsoft Money, and they thought, wow, what a... Now, this is a redundancy. Pardon? I don't know. Of course, the thing with those that I was trying to be the funniest was when they came out with a CD-ROM called Microsoft DOS. I thought it was a bundle of money and Bob. It should be. Well, Bob, of course, has now been upgraded into a new product called Office 97. You know, this little paperclip that comes up. Every time I see it, I want to shoot it. It's one of the reasons I'm still using Office 95, which might make qualify as a vintage computer program at this point. I don't know. Computer retroviruses? Well, I don't know, but I do recommend that you practice safe hacks. Come on in, I need more people asking me questions. Well, I mean, this whole show is sort of retro. You know, computers age like fine milk. You all know, I don't know, do all of you know Philippe Kahn's law, which is that no matter how much the price performance curve improves, the computer you want is always $3,000? I've got my own addition to that, which is no matter how fast your computer is, it's always too slow for your word processor. Sincerely and truly, in the depths of its corporate heart, believes that you had too much hard disk space. I think it's all a great practical joke that they're all doing. Any other questions? DRAM interactive. I'm taking your questions and giving answers that hopefully you would actually try to use. Anything else? Okay, well, thank you.